Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 3rd of November, the day after the midterms. Today, we are going to be looking at what happened in the country yesterday. Carl Lubsdorf is our guest. Carl is the former Washington Bureau Chief of the Dallas Morning News. He also was a correspondent in the Washington Bureau of the Baltimore Sun for a number of years. He's written about White House and national politics for many years. He's been to 23 national conventions and covered every presidential election since 1960. He's been a visiting fellow at Yale University, written for the Columbia and Washington Journalism Reviews. He's appeared on many prominent television programs, Meet the Press, Washington Week in Review, Lehrer NewsHour, Inside Politics, and many other shows. And he also was, for years, co-host of a weekly public affairs television program, Capital Conversation. He was president of the White House Correspondents Association and, in 2008, of the Gridiron Club, Wisconsin's oldest journalistic society. We're going to get, we did last hour, as we looked at the state races, we're going to get tons of phone calls on this hour as well, because of what happened yesterday. And here is our phone number for you to join the conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email, talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. And just a reminder that for those of you who really eat this up, all this conversation, there will be many more hours of conversation. This afternoon, Talk of the Nation, we'll be looking at what happened with Ken Rudin, who will be on, one of our favorite guys. And Ben Marins will be devoting his entire program to analysis of the state and national races as well. So let us say hello to Carl. Hi, Carl.
Hey, Kathleen. Happy to be with you.
Well, thank you very much for being with us. So what was it? Was it, you know, people are really hurting? Is that what it was yesterday? They don't have jobs. They don't have enough money. Was that it?
I think that's the basic thing, and the fact that they don't think the things have changed much since Barack Obama was elected on a pledge that he would change things.
Mm-hmm.
So the substance hasn't changed, at least as far as people out in the country are concerned. Now, a lot of things have been passed, but a lot of them have long-term impact, like the health care plan, or just haven't, you know, produced the jobs that people are looking for. And, of course, President Obama promised he would change, you know, the culture in Washington, too, and that hasn't happened at all. Not that it's all his fault by any means, but people, I think, are very frustrated with the economy, and they took out their frustration on the Democrats.
Yeah. So let's do the what-if thing, because I guess we have to today. What needed to be done? Was it realistic to think that he could have turned the economy around in a fairly short period of time? And, B, what did we expect that he would do, that he would create jobs, that he would bring back companies from overseas, that he would do massive public works? What do we think?
I think it's unrealistic to have expected that, but of course he was the one who raised the expectations, and you know how we are. We always, the Americans are an optimistic people, and you know, a lot of them bought into the optimism which he campaigned on.
Mm-hmm.
We like there was an interesting article in the New York Times several days ago which sort of discussed the approach to the economy. And it said that last fall, when it looked like some of the statistics were beginning to turn up and that the economy was really showing signs of coming out of the recession, the administration basically made a decision that they weren't going to seek any more stimulus help for the economy, that things were going to improve. And, of course, what happened is they didn't improve, and they didn't get any better. Now, that having been said, it's sort of, you know, a real problem they had, because I'm not sure they could have passed any national legislation for more stimulus help.
Right.
President Obama made an interesting concession in the New York Times interview, New York Times Magazine interview several weeks ago, which is, I think, is one of the more revealing pieces about his presidency. He said he noted that in the stimulus bill that about a third of it was tax cuts, and he said that instead of proposing tax cuts, maybe he would have been better to have proposed no tax cuts. And then when the Republicans said, you have to have tax cuts, made some kind of a deal with them that, you know, if we put some tax cuts in, then you please support it. that he lost his leverage by proposing the tax cuts himself. Mm-hmm. The fact is, though, that in efforts to get Republican support, I think they made one basic error. The White House never really reached out to the Republican Party and to its leadership. And I'm not saying that they would have all come aboard their programs, but it might have, had a more positive effect on the climate here. Instead, they went reaching out for individual Republicans who could help them pass things. And they never had regular meetings with the Republican leadership. And I think that was one of, several basic mistakes they made in their approach.
So do you think the president will say that that's what we're going to do now when he addresses?
He has no choice to do that. I mean, he has to do things, sort of three areas in which he has to do things. One is he obviously has to reach out to the Republicans. And there'll be a lot of words said by both sides over the next couple of days. I think a lot of us will wait to see what follows the words. The second is I think he needs to, will need to signal at some point some desire to make substantive compromises on issues, whether it's something on health reform like tort reform, which he was very much opposed and the Republicans wanted, whether it's on some of the trade legislation that's there, and on spending issues, on the tax, extending the Bush tax cuts. And the third thing I think he needs to do is to show that he's going to adopt a different approach in his White House. He's had a rather insular group around him, mostly, from Chicago and who've been with him. And his chief of staff, of course, Rahm Emanuel, has left to run for mayor of Chicago. So he'll have to name a new chief of staff. There was an interesting suggestion last night on TV from Ed Rendell, the governor of Pennsylvania, who is said maybe he should pick someone like Colin Powell to be chief of staff to show this is a new day and he's reaching out. And I'm not sure Colin Powell is interested in that. It sounded a little like Ed Rendell was interested in that.
I bet he was.
But the point is he needs to reach out beyond the circle. And the fact is his political and his communications people have not served him well. This White House has done a very poor job of selling its product from the very start, and it's mishandled the politics of things. I'll give you a small example. There was that trip to Rhode Island a week ago where President Obama went up there to do a fundraiser for the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee and stepped right in it because they have a three-way governor's race there, and he decided he wouldn't support the Democrat because Lincoln Chafee, the former Republican senator turned independent, was running. And he had supported Obama in the presidential election, so Obama didn't want to get in the middle of that. Well, the fact is, and of course, when the White House said that he wasn't supporting the candidate for governor, the candidate for governor set him off and told, Obama to shove it. Now, that Democrat finished third in the race. Chafee, the independent, did win the race. But the fact is that trip should never have been scheduled a week before the election to Rhode Island. Someone wasn't thinking, and there have been a number of examples of things where they're not thinking. So they need some new blood in there.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Tea Party for a moment. Actually, I'm kind of sick about all the news that we've had about the Tea Party, which seems to be endless. But I'd like to look at some of the races where Tea Party people won yesterday, how many they did win, how many they lost, and how the Republican Party deals with the Tea Party, which, as one of their members was saying, has a really different philosophy of what government is and should be, and quite different than mainstream Republicans.
Well, it's interesting because I think the Tea Party in one way was obviously a big help to the Republicans. It had a degree of enthusiasm that was really one of the factors in the large Republican turnout. And there are a number of people who've been elected to both the House and Senate. You certainly have one in Wisconsin in the new senator-elect there. That really have some Tea Party roots.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be very interesting when they come to Washington because a lot of them have sort of taken the position we need to stand up for our principles. They're sort of against compromising. And yet what needs to happen in Washington from both sides is compromising. And specifically, there's going to be a vote in the House, both houses, in early next year. There's the legal ceiling on the federal debt has to be raised periodically unless the government suddenly starts going into the black. And this is the kind of thing that typically conservatives have used to make a political point about spending by voting against it. And it's pretty safe if the Democrats have a majority in both houses. They force the Democrats to produce the votes to pass it, because if the debt ceiling doesn't get raised, the government suddenly can't borrow money and it can't do a lot of things and can come to a halt. Well, now the Republican leadership has the problem of getting it through the House, mm-hmm. which means getting some Republican votes. And you know there are going to be some Republicans there who are going to want to, you know, just vote against it because they say we're against federal spending. And it's going to be interesting to see how that plays off with the new responsibility the Republicans have. Now, let me say something further about the Tea Party, because it's interesting the way the Senate elections have turned out. It appears that it is possible that the Republicans lost their chance to win the Senate as well as the House because of the primary victories of Tea Party candidates. In at least two states so far, Delaware and Nevada, the Tea Party candidates who won the primaries over the party establishment candidates were beaten yesterday. Delaware is a pretty clear-cut case that Mike Castle, the congressman and former governor, a moderate Republican, if he had been the nominee for the Senate seat, he would have won that seat, which was won by Democrat Chris Coons. And that appears also to be the case in Nevada, where I think in the biggest surprise perhaps of the whole election, Harry Reid, the Democratic leader in the Senate, has been reelected.
Yeah, how
re-elected
did he
with 50% of the vote.
How did he pull it off?
And it has to be because enough voters decided that Sharon Angle was just not what they wanted in the Senate.
Have you seen a breakdown of that vote at all? Was there a heavy turnout among Latino voters?
Yes.
Do you know?
I haven't seen the exact numbers, but the Latino groups are saying that, and Bill Richardson, the outgoing governor of New Mexico, who was very active in campaigning there, said, yes, apparently the Latino vote was up. By all accounts, Reid had a terrific ground operation. It was sort of created from what the Democrats did during the caucuses in 2008. You know, they had early caucuses for the first time. They had an enormous effort by both the Obama and the Clinton forces at the time to turn out votes. They transformed that into a party apparatus in the general election, and that was very helpful to Harry Reid. So, yes, I think that those were factors. But the fact is that Harry Reid, by all polls, was not popular in Nevada, that a lot of people, you know, felt he should not be in the Senate. He had had close races before, and with a candidate with less problems than Sharon Angle, I think most people think he would have been beaten.
Right. How many states, before we go to phone calls, and I want to get many of them in, made changes as big as Wisconsin? We really turned red yesterday. Were there a lot of other states that did the same?
There are a number of states, and especially through the Rust Belt. Mm-hmm. But, you know, even a state like New York, where the Democrats won the big statewide races, Andrew Cuomo, Mario Cuomo's son, was elected governor in a landslide. The Republicans gained four or five House seats. In Ohio, where the Democratic governor was beaten for reelection, Ted Strickland, the Republicans won, I think, five House seats. It's interesting. There was a lot of people watching the 48 districts which John McCain carried and which had Democratic House members, and with good reason, because three-quarters of them went Republican yesterday. You know, we knew where the vulnerable Democrats were. What happened was that virtually all of them lost.
Mm-hmm. Let's welcome phone calls. Here's our phone number. We're talking about what happened throughout the country during yesterday's midterms. Our phone number, and we have lines open, so take them right away because they won't be open for long. 800-486-8655. Our guest is Carl Lubsdorf, former Washington bureau chief of the Dallas Morning News. He is now a columnist for the newspaper and for their website. We go to Scott from La Crosse first. Hello, Scott.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, Scott.
I got a question for this gentleman.
Sure.
I have heard a couple of sound bites this morning on public radio from elders in the Republican ranks. I guess you'd have to consider Newt Gingrich an elder at this point, and Ken Duberstein, who was an advisor to Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
And Duberstein made the comment, the biggest mistake the Republicans could make in the wake of these victories is to think that this is an endorsement of them by the American public. leadership in the Congress now needs to do is to work with Obama to show some real progress. And I remember watching that thing on 60 Minutes last week where they, I forget what town they were in, but was it in Ohio? Yeah, that was at Newton, Iowa, yeah. Where these people were just enraged because nothing gets done that they can see to help them. Now, I can't square that with Mitch McConnell saying his number one goal is making sure Obama's a one-term president. Oh, and my reading, anyway, of some of the comments that John Boehner had made in the wake of this, saying, you know, the White House had better understand that this is a course correction, a demand for course correction, and in other words, our way or no way. So my question, I guess, is, will they go with party of no?
I think that remains to be seen. You know, we'll get the first clue on Obama's attitude at his press conference today. But the Republicans have had an attitude that, up till now, is that they wanted, even when the Democrats controlled both houses and the presidency, what they wanted was the White House and the Democrats to accept their ideas, period. And there will be some of that. And to the extent that they do that, there's going to be problems because unless they seek middle ground, neither side has the power to win these fights. I mean, the Senate is basically, whether it has 51 or 52 Democrats in it, is basically going to be ungovernable if they have open partisan warfare, because neither side will be able to get the 60 votes that they've all decided is necessary to get things done there. Boehner can put a lot of things through the House, the new Speaker, John Boehner, because the way the House rules work, and the House is almost like a parliamentary body in which the party that controls it and the Republicans will have a comfortable majority by House standards, one of the biggest they've had, in fact, since right after World War II. So they'll be able to pass a lot of stuff, Republican stuff, in the House, but it's going to go through the Senate, and it's not going to be accepted by the White House. So we're going to find out. And they're going to be under pressure from the Tea Party people. And, the House Republicans are a very conservative group. There are not that many moderate Republicans left in the House. In the Senate, ironically, we've got some new Tea Party people, like Rand Paul and like Senator like Lee from Utah and your Senator-elect Johnson. But you also got some fairly moderate Republicans. Mark Kirk from Illinois was elected, and Lisa Murkowski probably has beaten the Tea Party candidate in Alaska. We don't know that yet. And Rob Portman, perhaps, from Ohio. So there will be some moderate Republicans there, but just because the House can pass something, and when Gingrich became Speaker and when the Republicans won the Congress in 94, they passed a whole bunch of stuff in the House and it never saw the light of day in the Senate.
Yeah. Thanks, Scott, as always, for your call. Ed in Wausau, hi.
Hello.
Hi, Ed. Go right ahead.
Hi. I would just like to comment about Ron Johnson. I think that Ron Johnson's going to find out pretty quickly that being a senator is not anything like running a business. He's going to find that he's not going to have subordinates, telling him how things work and, making him look good all the time. He's going to have campaign staff, sure, but, when he's in the Senate, his colleagues are going to find out pretty quickly whether or not he's playing with a full deck. And that's the impression I was left with during the campaign. I was left with the impression that, Russ Feingold knows the job description and Ron Johnson's really just role-playing.
Well, if I might say, first of all, I don't know Mr. Johnson. I was not in Wisconsin in this campaign, so I don't have a position on, you know, what he is able to do or not. But we've had this before where people have come into the Senate, and it's pretty different from anything they've done. We've had governors come in who are used to, you know, pushing a button and having things happen, and they suddenly get in the Senate and discover they're one of 100, and it doesn't work that way. So there's usually a learning curve for some of these people, and some of them accommodate well and some not. Another thing that frequently happens with the Senate, and of course it's far too early to know anything about this, people get elected to the Senate in these kinds of elections, and they're there for 6 years, and then they're gone. A number of the Republicans who were elected in the Reagan landslide of 1980, for example, which was a big turnover in the Senate, in 1986, they were beaten for re-election. And you get people in waves in both houses who don't quite fit in, and it doesn't quite work out, and they're only there a short time.
I want to ask you about jobs again. It seems to me as though this election was very clearly saying to the administration, to Democrats and Republicans, we're really hurting, and people are. I mean, I'm talking to you from the city of Milwaukee, where the unemployment rate among African Americans is extremely high, as it is in many other urban centers. 10% almost unemployment. People are being furloughed. People have their paychecks cut. They're not making any progress. And they were saying, I think yesterday, you got to do something about this. And my question is, how do you have a middle ground deal with the enormity of this program? I mean, how do you have...
I think that, you know, this is one of these questions that no one, I think, really has the full answer to. And you have contrary positions here. The Democrats, you know, given their way, the White House and the Democrats would pass a second stimulus bill, would do a lot of public works projects, which are desperately needed in many places, bridges and road improvement, and would create a lot of jobs that way. But that's going to cost money. The Republicans will never go for that.
Right.
They're talking about tax breaks and business tax breaks. Now, they oppose some of the ones that Obama was proposing earlier this year. Their view of that may change now that, you know, the election has passed. I think what both parties are having trouble coming to grips with, and I think the country is having trouble coming to grips with, that some of the jobs that have been lost are not coming back. And businesses have discovered in a number of cases that they can do their business with fewer people. They make them work harder, and it may not be as pleasant. We find this in the news business and in many other businesses, but they find that under the pressures of the economy that they can do stuff with fewer people, and that puts a lot of burden on what do we do with all those people who suddenly can't get their jobs back. So I think there is no easy answer here, and I'm not sure this election has done much to create a situation that's going to help it.
Right. Yeah, well, I think you're right.
One of the issues here is going to be if things don't improve. You know, everyone, I think, thinks that things will modestly improve over the next couple of years just by the natural recovery from the recession. And there are signs that the Fed will try to do more to, you know, to jack up the economy. But if things don't improve, you know, who's going to be held responsible? Obama, the Republicans in Congress?
Yeah, right.
They got a lot at stake here.
Well, let's just move in somebody we haven't thought of, huh? Well, let's welcome more phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. One line is open right now. Our guest this hour is Carl Lubsdorf, former Washington Bureau Chief of the Dallas Morning News, and he's currently writes a weekly column for the paper and for its website. He has covered every presidential election and administration since John F. Kennedy was elected in 1960. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. Returning now to phone calls, let's go to Peter from Stoughton. Hi, Peter.
Good morning. This is coming from someone who's helped the Democrats campaign for quite a few cycles now. I'll try and make my points quickly. First of all, people talk about getting the Democrats to work together akin to herding cats. And if someone in the Bush, if a Republican representative in the Bush administration got out of line, they'd get a visit from the RNC, and they would be instructed that you get in line or you lose funding or we'll run someone else against you. And when something as simple as eliminating the Bush tax cuts came up before the Democrats, you had the so-called Blue Dog Democrats who would not get in line on that, and we blew our chance. That's apparently something that's going to be there forever, whereas if that had happened 4 years ago, as I said, they would have gotten a visit and saying, all right, we got to make this happen or we'll do this to you. Secondly, the Democrats are no good at showing us what they've done. The Financial Reform Act has a lot of good things in it that benefit us regular people. The Health Care Act had also lots of components to it that just about everybody could like, but nobody knows what's in it. And I think that's probably the biggest problem as far as the Democrats are concerned, their lack of discipline and their lack of ability to sell themselves and show us what they have done.
Let me answer the second part of your question first, because I think there's no doubt about that, that they've done a terrible sales job. Someone was saying that the night they passed the stimulus bill, the president should have had an Oval Office speech or a news conference and basically announced to the country, this is what we've just done, and this is what the tax cut that you're getting is, and things like that. And they've done a very poor job of selling their program. And they've, in this campaign, the White House has been all over the lot. One week the issue was Boehner, the next year it was the Chamber of Commerce, and it's been a very muddled message. Now, as far as the first part, I think what the gentleman says is not totally correct. One of the things that did happen in the House under the leadership of Nancy Pelosi, and one of the things that I think drove the Republicans sort of nuts, and one of the reasons that they made her, you know, such a target, aside from the fact that it's good politics to go after the liberal woman from San Francisco, is that she was a very tough leader in the House.
She was.
She forced through the House every major bill that came up for over a year passed through the House. The problem was that they didn't all pass through the Senate. She got cap and trade through. She got financial reform through. She got stimulus through. You know, there was a lot of arm twisting. But you have to remember that the way the Democrats got their House membership up to 257 or 258, which is where it was by winning in a number of conservative districts. For example, there were 49 districts in 2008 which voted for John McCain and for the Democratic House members. Of the 48 there were 49, one of them subsequently became a Republican. Of the other 48, 37 of them were defeated on Tuesday in the election. She had to be aware that people from those kinds of districts had pressures from at home which they had to follow. And what she basically told people this year was, after these series of tough votes, one, we're not going to force you to take any more tough votes before the election, and secondly, you do whatever you have to do to get elected. If getting elected, the best way is to attack me, do that. Unfortunately, the Republican wave was so big, none of this mattered much. But you can see when you look at the membership why she did that. It was interesting because there was this whole discussion about whether they should have voted on extending the Bush tax cuts before the election. And the Republicans made a big thing that by not doing that, the Democrats were somehow raising taxes. The fact is, I don't think they had the votes to pass it. There were too many people from conservative districts, or even not so conservative districts. Jerry Connolly is the congressman from suburban Fairfax County in the Washington suburbs. It's an upper-income area that has been increasingly Democratic in recent years. I think he got 57% in the last election. Jerry Connolly was against extending, was in favor of extending all of the Bush tax cuts, including the upper income. Why? Because he's got a lot of upper income voters in his district, and he would have voted that way. As it turned out, he may be the only one of four closely contested Virginia Democratic races who survived. He's like 400 votes ahead this morning. And I guarantee you, if he hadn't taken that position on that issue, he wouldn't have survived. So I think that, you know, she did what she could and twisted enough arms while she could, and then she had to let people try to reflect their districts and hope that they would get reelected that way.
So if the president had come in, we remember the election. It wasn't that long ago. There was great euphoria among many people in this country. The president is a gifted communicator. Did he read the country wrong? And if he had said right away when he first started, listen, I know what the issue is here. You're suffering. Manufacturers have gone overseas. We don't have jobs. The unemployment is unacceptably high. I am going to address this. We have to do this. We're going to create jobs.
Well, of course, the first thing he did when he came in was pass the stimulus
bill. But I mean a big number of jobs.
Well,
I mean a big FDR number.
I think a lot of economists felt that way. I don't think they could have gotten a bigger bill through the Senate, frankly. One thing that did happen is between the election and the inauguration, it became evident that the economy was in far worse shape than they thought. And there's a big debate going on with within the Democratic Party whether they should have not tried to pass health reform and had done only economic stimulus and other economic job creation bills. I can imagine with the left wing of the Democratic Party how it would have reacted if he had announced we're not going to try to pass health reform this year. They made a decision to try to do both. They did do the stimulus first. They didn't go to health care. They let health care drag out far too long. You remember all those weeks and weeks when they were trying to negotiate with the Senate Finance Committee to see if they could get a couple of votes there?
Oh, yeah.
What they didn't understand was that there was such pressure within the Republican Party on the Republican members of the Finance Committee that was not going to happen. And the president got no points for trying to reach out to those individual Republicans, and it delayed the vote in such a way that they got caught, you know, they didn't get it done by the end of the year, and then there was a special election in Massachusetts. So, I mean, I think they just sort of have mishandled some things, but I think they started out trying to do the economy, and then the situation got worse than they realized it was, and they did one thing really stupid, which they really paid a price for, and that was the statement that if they would pass the stimulus bill, they could hold unemployment to 8%. It was over 8% by the time the stimulus bill was passed.
Thanks, Peter, for your call. Paul is next in Rhinelander. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you doing?
All right, how are you doing, Paul?
Good. I just have two quick questions for Carl. Number one, he's got 8 years on me because the first I got started was at the 68th Chicago Convention with press credentials. So I enjoyed that, but I wasn't for 60 like you were. Secondly, this was the first time that I remember in that many years that who the candidate was, what they stood for, and what they'd done in their lives meant absolutely nothing on the outcome. And I think, what a diatribe on our process and our message delivery system by both the White House and the media, of course. They're culpable, too. And the second thing is, all we've heard is how there are too many business regulations from government. Government is regulating business just far too much. Well, now we have business regulating government. And so guess what? That's going to be almost impossible to turn around. Every state in the union, business runs the show. Business has elected two Supreme Court judges here in Wisconsin, the last two. We've got a conservative business-elected Supreme Court in the United States that called an election and then called the Citizens United. What a horrible thing. Business runs the government now exclusively.
Carl.
Well, I think in a lot of states that's certainly the case, and it's certainly business spend a lot of money on this election, and we know why they spent the money. But more was going on in this election than just business spending. The Democrats had a lot of money in this election. In many places, they were not outspent when you count in their allies in labor. And, in fact, compared to 1994, the Democrats, A, were much better prepared for this election than 94, and B, they, you know, certainly started raising money earlier and were not overwhelmed totally, you know, in most places. But the national mood was such that it didn't matter. And sometimes there is an election where you don't, you know, you do things and it doesn't matter. I know people who worked, you know, in local campaigns, and they worked very hard in campaigns, and then the results came in. They said, could we have done anything different? And the answer is probably not this year.
Thanks, Paul, so much for your call. We go next to Brandon from Eau Claire. Hi, Brandon.
Hi. I've been listening to NPR for a long time, and I've been following the debates, and look, I'm no psychic, but I think that I need to say a couple things, and that is, people really don't understand how detrimental this election was. Basically, now that the Republicans have control of the House, there will absolutely be nothing done in the next 2 years. Nothing. They will block everything. They're, you know, and as far as the Democrats go, I'm a Democrat, but you know, the Democrats in power, mistake. They, you know, when are they going to learn not to bring a knife to a gunfight? They lost it.
Do you share that pessimism? Nothing will get done, Carl?
Well, I think it's going to be difficult. I think the House won't do nothing. The House will try to do some things. The problem is some of the things the House tries to do may not get through the Senate or pass the White House. And that's the problem, is how the parties are so diametrically opposed on so many issues at this point.
Yes.
And the room for middle ground is not very as great as it once was. And I don't know at this point, you know, who's going to get blamed. I think it's as possible that Obama will in the end get blamed as the Republicans will get blamed.
Thanks very much, Brandon, for your call. We go to Reed in Clintonville. Hi, Reed.
Good morning. Thanks for this opportunity, and I must say I agree totally with Brandon. My comments are just two here. One, the Republicans own it, and hopefully they will ultimately reap the benefits of doing nothing for those of us here in the country, both in our state and countrywide. Secondly, we here in the 8th Congressional District in Wisconsin are now represented by Reed Ribble, same first name, I might say. And I would hope that he would show solidarity with all of us out here in the 8th Congressional District by refusing to take health care, just as our previous congressman, Dr. Steve Kagan, did. He did not take health insurance through the government, absolutely refused it for his terms in office. And I would hope that Reed Ribble would do the same thing to show solidarity with us out here that, for instance, my wife paying $700 a month for health insurance. Fortunately, as a senior citizen, I have Medicare. And I tried very hard not to abuse it. That said, I would wish the Republicans good luck, and I would ask them to reconsider Mitch McConnell's comment of the intent of the Republican Party is to, and the only issue that they wish to address is to make our president a one-term president. What a negative approach to solving the problems of our country and helping them.
Thank you, Reed. Thanks for the call. Carl.
The Republican leadership is having a news conference at the moment, and one of the lines that cut the sound off said that Mitch McConnell said that the American people appreciated the Republicans saying no. So we'll see how that goes. Your local congressman, that's you have to deal with that. You are from a district that I'm sure you know has switched hands a number of times over the years. It's one of those districts that's one of those few swing districts left in the country that regularly switches parties. As far as your statement that the Republicans now own it, one of the problems of this election is, of course, the Republicans don't totally own it. They own the House. But they don't own the Senate. They don't own the White House. So responsibility really is mixed here. And that creates a problem both for getting things done, and it's going to be interesting to see who is going to get blamed. It's clearly in the president's interest to have some things, positive things, happen, and for him to, you know, change any perception that he's unwilling to compromise as he promised he would do. But a lot is going to depend on, as previous callers said, on how the economy goes over the next couple of years, and ultimately on who the Republicans come up with as an opponent for President Obama, assuming he's running for re-election, which we assume.
And thanks for the call, Reed. Let's go to Ellen in Madison. Hi, Ellen.
Hi. I guess I would describe myself as a moderate conservative. And as I've watched the election and just the politics over the past couple of years, I see my role is one of a moderating voice whenever I hear either Republicans or Democrats, whether it's on Facebook or Twitter or in a personal conversation, blatantly blaming the other party. And, of course, the most credible place speak to are my fellow Republicans. So I agree with the guy who said this is not a referendum on Republican ideals. It is a second chance to work together. I feel strongly about mm-hmm. that. I don't see the Republican Party as a party of no. I see both parties as contrarian and looking, and the hairs go up on the back of my neck whenever, because I think Democrats do it as well as Republicans, saying they're just trying to oust the other party. If anything, I don't know, maybe I'm the minority. I think we're all sick of the negative politics, even though negative politics has always been with us. I'm ready for statesmanship on both sides. I was very disappointed when Obama came to Madison because I felt like his voice, when I heard it booming over the grounds of UW campus, was every bit as kind of childish as some of the Republicans he was speaking against. And I really want to hear him rise to the level of speaking like the statesman that I think he can be. I don't think that, I hope that we don't find ourselves blaming each other. We live in a society of instant gratification, and the Republicans aren't going to turn it around any more than the Democrats did. And anybody who thinks they are is living in a dream world.
Carl.
Well, I think a lot of people who agree with the caller and, you know, do want a reduction in partisanship and want an end to the stuff. The only thing I can say about Obama's, you know, comments in the campaign, some of which were not, you know, the most edifying he's ever made, was it was a campaign. His goal was to get Democratic core voters out because all indications were that Democratic core voters were not going to vote in as great numbers as Republican core voters. So while that doesn't excuse it, it sort of explains, you know, you do take a more partisan, you say more partisan things in campaigns. Presidents have always done that. That's nothing new. His role in the campaign was not particularly new, and the fact that he was unsuccessful at it was also not particularly new. Presidents usually don't have much impact in midterm elections. They hope they can raise money and get their party out. In this case, they don't seem to have been too successful, although he may actually have helped to elect by the narrowest margins a governor in Illinois. So I think every president I can remember, Reagan talking about being more bipartisan. I've been talking about George Herbert Walker Bush talking about that. Clinton in his inaugural address said that. They've all said that, and then they've ended up in these fights because, you know, the other side, the opposition, wants to defeat the winning side. I can remember back in 1992, on the day after that President Clinton was elected president, Bob Dole, then the Republican leader of the Senate, went on television and said, I represent the 57% who didn't vote for him, and we're going to stand up against Clinton. This was the day after the election. Now, after Obama was elected, there was a lot less of that from the Republicans. It took them at least until January or February till they started doing that. And the Democrats did the same thing with Bush, especially after the disputed 2000 election. So it's true, both parties do it. How we get away from it, not clear. both parties, unfortunately, have strains in them, have conflicts in them. The Republicans are going to have a conflict between the very conservative and the Tea Party types who you know, were the driving forces, and all the independents who voted for them because they want things to get done. The Democrats are going to have pressures between the people in the party who say think that Obama has basically done the right things and don't want to compromise it, and those who are saying, look, we got to listen to the voters, or we won't, even more of us won't be here.
Yeah, and those who are from the progressive side who've had it with Obama, too.
One thing, if you come from a liberal district that always votes for Democrats, if you come from the previous caller from the 8th district, you got to be a little more careful because that district is just as likely to toss out a Democrat as it is the next time to toss out a Republican.
Carl Lubsdorf is our guest for this second hour of our show this Wednesday after midterm elections analysis of what happened, looking at the national races this hour, the races outside the state of Wisconsin for the most part. And we'll take a couple more of your phone calls and we hope a couple emails on the Ideas Network. An email, if you could just spend a few moments on this, Carl, who couldn't stay but wanted to know about John Dingell losing in Michigan. What all happened in Michigan?
Well, I think Dingell won.
Oh, he did win in Michigan.
Yeah, I looked at this morning. I'm pretty sure he won. In Michigan, a couple of Democrats lost a couple of seats. They lost an open seat up in the Upper Peninsula where the Congressman Stupak retired, and one incumbent, Schauer, was defeated. A moderate Republican was elected governor by a large margin in the governor's race.
Okay. Yes, and we do. Chrissy was looking at that, too. Dingell did win. So, caller, change in your information. Change in the party. He did win. What would happen to the Tea Party, another email movement, if the recession doesn't end in the next 2 years? I think if they don't get results, their movement will just fizzle out. Do you agree?
I'm not sure about that. I think they're going to play a major role in the Republican presidential fight. You know, they feel that they've just started here. And, you know, there's no single Tea Party movement as a group. It's a very loose collection of a lot of groups in a lot of places. But if things are sort of stalemated, they're going to feel, you know, well, we got to get our president in. That's the way to change things. And it is a way to change things in the country. And, you know, a lot of speculation that Sarah Palin will run for president and that she certainly sounds like she's running.
Yes, she does.
With the Tea Party support and how that would work. And it's going to be very interesting, you know, with the presidential campaign opens in the Iowa caucuses. The Iowa Republican Party is quite conservative. Sarah Palin would have an excellent chance of winning there. But then you move to New Hampshire, not quite as susceptible to that, perhaps, although the Republicans did extremely well in New Hampshire this year. They won back two House seats, won the legislature, and elected a senator. So you don't know, but Sarah Palin, whose national numbers in the broader electorate are not so good, is a big favorite of the Tea Party people and of the hardcore in the Republican Party. So I think that's where they're going to go next.
Yeah. Not only Dingell, just to give you more information, 29th term now, unprecedented. That's incredible. 29 terms. Scott in Green Bay, hi.
Good morning. One of the things I think that really was amazing is the
Scott, could you get closer to the phone? You're echoing here.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that any better?
That's better, yeah.
Okay. Well, it's the governor's races, because now we're talking 30, 31, 32 governors, Republican governors, and the effect that's going to have on redistricting, I think, for the 2012 election is going to be huge. That's one point. And another point is I think President Obama is actually in the worst position he could be with just the Republicans winning the House, because if they would have won the House and the Senate, he'd be able to point to the Republicans as there being a problem. And then my third point has to do with the kind of lamenting about not enough moderates in the House anymore. I mean, come on, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, I mean, she runs the House. Nobody's really complaining about the lack of moderates on the Democrat side when she ran the House.
All right, let's go to the gubernatorial races. Redistricting, that is a big issue.
A big issue. And I wrote a column about it a couple of weeks ago and said that the election was likely to set the Democrats up for a double whammy. The result of redistricting is going to make it extremely difficult for the Democrats to win the House back in 2012, even if Obama is a successful candidate for re-election, and perhaps for the rest of the decade. The Republicans are really in good position to control the states that have the biggest gains and the biggest losses. In Texas, for example, where the Democrats had some hopes of winning the state House of Representatives, they were only within a couple of seats of control. They lost a whole bunch of seats. Their leader got beaten. They lost three House races probably in the state. It's very possible that after the redistricting is completed, there will be all but one, possibly two, Democrats from the U.S. House from Texas will be Hispanics or black.
Carl, thank you so much for your analysis this hour. We appreciate it. Carl Lubsdorf, our guest, he writes a weekly column now for the Dallas News, and you can get that at dallasnews.com. He spent many, many years with the Dallas News in Washington and also worked with the Baltimore Sun and has covered all the presidents since John Kennedy. Thanks to Chrissy Pease and Rhonda Fanning. We'll be with you again tomorrow on the Ideas Network.